Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft and I'm looking forward to learning Sefer Malachim together. Today we're going to begin our study with Malachim Aleph, Perek Aleph. First, just in general, Malachim was written by Yirmiyahu HaNavi, according to the Gemara in Bava Batra, and he did so to help people of his era understand the most tragic event of their lifetimes, the Churban Beit HaMikdash. His goal was to explain why the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, and his reason was because of the sins of Bnei Yisrael and of their leaders. So in order to paint a complete picture, he decided to begin Sefer Malachim with the Beit HaMikdash being built by Shlomo HaMelech and concluded with its destruction by the Bavlim. However, counter to what we might have expected, the Sefer doesn't actually begin with Shlomo HaMelech. Rather, it begins with David HaMelech. We're told that at the end of his life, David was plagued with an inability to keep warm, and his servants found a young woman, Avishag HaShunamit, to keep him warm. The question that many of the Parshanim ask is, why was David inflicted with this particular punishment? Why specifically with the inability to keep warm? The Radak, Rav David Kimchi, offers three suggestions. The first is because David was physically weak from all the wars in which he fought, and so he explains that it was a natural consequence of his involvement in violence for the security of his kingdom. His second suggestion is that this particular punishment, this particular illness was a punishment for his sin in counting the nation, which, as you just finished learning in Sefer Shmuel, is the last thing we hear about in Sefer Shmuel, that David counted the nation directly without the Machatzit HaShekel, and Hashem was very upset. And the Radak explains that his punishment is recorded here in the beginning of Sefer Malachim, which provides a connection between the end of Sefer Shmuel and the beginning of Sefer Malachim. The Radak's third suggestion is that this was a punishment for something else that he did actually a lot earlier in his life, namely the cutting of Shaul's cloak. If you recall, when David was running away from Shaul, at a certain point he was able to catch Shaul unawares while he was sleeping, and he wanted to show Shaul that while he had the ability to kill him, he chose not to. And to do so, he cut a corner of his cloak. And according to this suggestion, this was a lack of respect for Shaul's clothing, and therefore, as a mida keneged mida punishment, his own clothing no longer provided the warmth that they were supposed to. Moreover, there are textual parallels that actually indicate a connection to another one of David's sins, perhaps the most infamous of them all, and that is his sin with Bathsheba. The parallels go as follows. These are the only two stories in all of Tanakh, this story of David's illness and the story of his sin with Bathsheba. They're the only two stories in all of Tanakh which feature the three characters of David, Bathsheba, and Natan HaNavi. In our parak here in Sefer Malachim, Natan HaNavi and Bathsheba work together to inform David of Adoniyahu's rebellion. Adoniyahu is David's son, who has decided that he wants to become king in the absence of David's appointing a successor. And Natan HaNavi and Bathsheba work together to make sure that David knows of Adoniyahu's rebellion in order to ensure Shlomo's succession. In Sefer Shmuel, it's Natan HaNavi who rebukes David for his sin with Bathsheba. And so it's these three characters who are the main characters in both of these stories. That's one parallel. Another parallel is in a particular phrase used in both stories. In the Avishag HaShunamit story here in Perek Aleph of Sefer Malachim, we are told that Avishag HaShunamit was brought to David in order to warn him. His servants tell him, "V'shachva b'chekecha, she shall lie in your embrace." This phraseology is very reminiscent of Natan HaNavi's mashal when he was delivering rebuke to David HaMelech for having committed this sin with Bathsheba. He gives a mashal of a man who only owns one sheep and a man who owns many sheep. And in discussing this owner, this man who only owns one sheep, he is describing the closeness of the owner with his sheep, and he says, "Ubecheko tishkav," and the sheep, they were so close that the sheep slept in his owner's embrace. And again, the particular usage of this phraseology in both of these stories may again point to a parallel between these two episodes. To further connect the two stories, the Radak even actually holds that David's oath to Bathsheba mentioned in this parak, in Perek Aleph of Sefer Malachim, that her son Shlomo would be heir to the throne, was actually an outgrowth of their sin. He explains that after David and Bathsheba came together the first time during their sin and Bathsheba became pregnant, their son died. And Bathsheba did not want to be with David anymore, in fear that any child born of their union would either die or be disgraced by his brothers, until David promised her that her son would be the next king. And so if we look at the beginning of Sefer Melachim in this way, it seems that Yirmiyahu is intentionally putting David's sins in the background. But why would he do this? What does this teach us? Why does the story appear here and not in Sefer Shmuel? And finally, why is this the way that Sefer Melachim begins? Is this a story about David? Is it a story about Shlomo? What is really going on here? I believe that really this is a story about Shlomo, because David's sin with Bathsheba resulted ultimately in his birth. And one might therefore think that Shlomo may not be fit to rule, since he is, quote, tainted by his parents' sin. And the question that we are supposed to be asking ourselves in reading this story is, can Shlomo move beyond his past? Can he rise up above his father's sins to become the king that Bnei Yisrael need? And the answer, as provided in Sefer Melachim, is a resounding yes. Just like his ancestor Yehuda and his father David were able to admit their sins. As Yehuda said about Tamar, Tzadka mimeni, she is more righteous than me, acknowledging the sin that he had committed with her. As his father David acknowledged with Bathsheba, Chatati LaHashem, after Natan HaNavi was finished with his rebuke and the mashal with the sheep, David said automatically and immediately, I sinned. But it's not a matter for kings. It's not a matter of whether or not they sin. Hashem does not want our kings to be perfect because they're still human. If anything, he just wants our kings to acknowledge their sins so that they can apologize and do tshuva and learn from their mistakes and become better people through it. It's not a matter of the actions that we commit, but rather what we do about them afterwards. And so perhaps it's not just a story about Shlomo. Really, it's not just a story about David, and it's not even only a story about Shlomo. Perhaps it's a story about all kings. Perhaps the story begins with David's sickness because it's viewed as a punishment for sins that he committed during his reign. And the message that we can learn from here is no king, no matter how great, is immune to the consequences of his actions. All kings sin because all kings are human. And the fact that the king, just like anyone else, is going to suffer the consequences of those sins is an extremely important message for the rest of the kings we're going to learn about in this Sefer. Kings who perpetrated serious crimes and were punished seriously for them. Perhaps this was the message that Yirmiyahu was trying to get across to them. The rest of the parak will do a little bit quicker. The parak continues with Adoniyahu's rebellion and David's successful quashing of that rebellion. Interestingly, despite Adoniyahu's having support of an army general, Yoav, David's army general, and a Kohen, Eviatar, also a supporter of David in his early days, when compared to Shlomo's group of followers, we notice a glaring absence in Adoniyahu's own coalition. He is not associated with any Navi. Whether this was because Adoniyahu wasn't interested in what a Navi had to say, or if it was because no Navi would support him, it's demonstrative of the major difference between Adoniyahu and Shlomo. Adoniyahu was not supported by Hashem, whereas Shlomo clearly was. And once it became clear to the people whom Hashem and David supported for the succession of the throne, Adoniyahu's followers deserted him, and he ran to the Mizbeach in hopes that Shlomo would not desecrate its holiness by killing him there. In the end, Shlomo decided to let Adoniyahu remain alive, at least in this parak, which demonstrates his strong security in his new leadership position. Perhaps the parak ends here to conclude with this message. As doubtful as we may have been in the beginning of the parak, who would succeed David? Would it be Adoniyahu? Would it be Shlomo? Would Bathsheba and Natan Hanavi's plan work out? Would it not? What was going to happen? Because again, David himself had not appointed a successor. Once David did decide on Shlomo HaMelech and he appointed him as a successor in public with everyone knowing, it's very clear that David's decision was absolute and final. As soon as Bnei Yisrael found out, they respected it and left Adoniyahu. And this demonstrates the success and authority of Malchut Beit David, which serves simultaneously as a perfect conclusion of Sefer Shmuel, whose essential question was what kind of leadership is best for Bnei Yisrael, and also as a perfect introduction to Sefer Melachim, whose essential question deals with what led to the Chorban Beit HaMikdash, to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore begins with Binyan Beit HaMikdash, the building of the Beit HaMikdash, and its very strong foundations, because Yirmiyahu's goal was to show how things went from ideal to terrible because of all the mistakes that the Melachim made. Thank you for studying together Le'iloi Nishmat Malka Esther Bat Zvi Yosef.